Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Morning show, Sports at 5 Night of the Fan. I'm JD Bunkus. Ailish Forfar. So, two quick things before we talk to Anthony Stewart. Number one is that the biggest story in sports yesterday was not the Lightning and Colorado Avalanche. Wasn't Nazem Kadri, wasn't the too many men's. That was not the outrage. That was not the thing that I was most upset with from the evening. It wasn't the Toronto Blue Jays. It wasn't even the strike zone, okay? Like, because we had our guy, Guillermo Martinez. Way to make a breakout of the scene. I got to say quickly about Guillermo Martinez, actually, with the Blue Jays, is that this dude is someone like a lot of Toronto Blue Jays players just swear by. He played ball with my cousin. He's buddies with him. Yeah. No, my cousin played, college baseball in the States. Whoa. Like, he was, like, a real deal guy.
What happened to you? You did nothing.
Honestly, if you saw my cousin next to me, exactly, you'd be like, what happened to you? Like, what happened? I'm like, I'm the runt to the litter.
Did he go to the Ohio State University?
No, he went to Santa Clara University. No,
that's
not right.
That sounds nice.
Yeah, no, that's not right. He went to Loyola Marymount.
I think that's much different.
Yeah, it's very different. So he's talked to me about this guy many times before, just like, yeah, great dude. Loves the guy. Thinks he's awesome. Even messaged with him after he got ejected. And the goal there was pretty clear. But to send the guy up is like, I don't think a lot of people know him. And it's kind of, you know, Dante Bichette got a lot of credit last year when the Blue Jays were having success. And a lot of people said, oh, Dante, having Dante around in that role. Pete Walker obviously gets a lot of credit. I think that everyone always judges the manager. It's different with Charlie Montoyo. But apparently Guillermo Martinez is like a really, really, really respected guy who really, really resonates with his players and guys swear by. So he isn't just the dude that went up there and yelled at the umpiring crew. But yeah, it was pretty awesome that he did.
I thought it was incredible. Like,
yeah, it was. It was sweet.
As a coach, that's kind of your role, is to not put that on the players. Like, they need to focus on the task at hand. You get that out of the way, then they just worry about playing and not carrying the most awful ump job of the season into the next day. I thought it was great.
No, but he was told like, hey, you can go up there and complain and enjoy your afternoon off.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that was
good
not
for you, buddy.
Yeah. So anyway, he goes up there, he does that. That was fun. But again, that was not the most egregious thing. The strike zone, not the most egregious thing. Too many men, not the most egregious thing. Not the biggest controversy. Did you see Steph Curry shooting at that carnival? How did this not make it the A-list? You must have not seen it.
Wait, explain that. Well, okay. How am I supposed to put a video in the A-list?
It's not a video, because I'm going to explain it to you.
Okay.
The greatest, like, the thing from yesterday that upset me the most, or made me feel the most validated, whatever, however you want to put it. Steph Curry is at an amusement park of some kind doing the, like, shooting for prizes.
Oh, serious?
He sucked.
Okay, well, you know what? I did this once at Wonderland.
Yes.
I went to the hockey shooting thing at Wonderland with a bunch of my friends while we were in college, okay?
Yep.
And we were abysmal. Yep. It was embarrassing. Yep. And we were like, hey, we play like varsity NCAA hockey, and we went up thinking we were going to win every prize. You
People
know what?
Took your money, snatched away.
There is something that they do something different. The sticks, there's something sketchy about it. The pucks are off. The sticks are off. I'm sure the basketball is some sort of, it's got weights in it. I know how that feels, and it is so embarrassing.
Yes. The same thing has happened to me at Wonderland with the three-point shooting contest.
Wonderland's a scam.
Yes. hey, Wonderland, like, prove us wrong. Do your deep dive. Show the people. Everybody knows that the carnival, you go or whatever, you go to a carnival, Wonderland, whatever, you go play carnival games, that you're at risk of getting scammed. That's kind of the thing. That's kind of the drill here, right? But you're supposed to feel like the athletics portion of this is, well, this is the real deal. Like, let me just shoot the three the way that it's meant to be shot. And that three-point shot at Wonderland is, I don't think I've ever hit one. And I'm a good three-point shooter. I'm not Steph Curry, but it's like I've said the same thing where it's like embarrassing. And you shoot there, and it's like, no, 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 no. And the free throw one is actually not rigged, I don't think, because they want you to be like build your confidence, go like, yeah, sure, shoot the free throws. It's fine. That one, whatever, maybe slightly rigged. Watching Steph Curry miss shot, and he's not missing in this video. Like, he's missing aggressively, shot after shot after shot. Three-point champion, greatest three-point shooter of all time, Steph Curry. Can't buy a bucket at this carnival where he's shooting threes from. You got to find the video. You got to look at it.
I already pulled it up. I'm going to watch it during the break.
The carnival industry needs to speak.
Yeah, honestly, can we get, hey, producers, we need to talk to someone that works at the carnival about what the scam is that they've placed into effect.
Somebody has to speak today because Steph Curry doing this. Why didn't we do this sooner from a content standpoint? Like, why? You're right. Why have we not had Sidney Crosby go down? No, you can't get Sid. You can barely get Sid to do anything. Like, but why have we not gotten Trevor Zegras?
Oh, yes. My God. Look at us
go. Why did we not get Trevor Zegras? Yes, we are. To go do the skills comp at Wonderland and prove it. Debunk. Let's see what it's all about. Why couldn't we just get Chris Boucher to go down to Wonderland and shoot some threes?
Danny Green would have done it. Oh, and would have had a meet and greet, and he would have wanted to get the ring there as well.
Danny Green, he'll still do it. Like, he'll be like, will there be an audience for me? I'll tape an episode of the podcast, and I will shoot threes, and everyone will adore me, and I will get a second championship ring. Anyway, I felt justice. I felt vindicated. It was like it's like someone – listen, you don't want to go to prison falsely. You don't want to go be falsely in prison. But I was like, the feeling of when you get out of prison, when they go, this person never did it. The system was wrong, falsely accused. I felt like Hurricane Carter.
I don't know if you gave me $100 to go to a carnival and I had to win on some game. I don't even know which game I would pick. Like, none of them are real. That beanbag toss one that you throw in the bucket, there's something, or like you throw that ball in, there's no way. You got to put special sneaky spin on. I bet you give that to Alek Manoah, he's not getting any of those in the bucket.
To Alek Manoah would do it. He'd be so competitive, he'd stay there for the rest of
the
his life.
The one where you pick the ducks up and also, they float around, that's a fun one.
Also,
no skill
Alek
needed.
Manoah is so big and intimidating that he'd look at the carny and be like, you better take the rig effect off, otherwise I'm coming back there.
Actually, like, you know the one where you throw the darts at the balloon wall?
Yeah.
I feel like there's potential to do well at that. You're probably good at darts.
I actually stink at darts. Oh, I'm like
really? You never admit that you're bad at something, so that's a bad sign.
I stink at darts. This is one of the weirdest things. I love obviously going to a pub. I'm a big pub guy.
Then you're really good when you have a couple of beers in you.
No, I suck at pub games. I'm terrible at pool, and I'm terrible at darts. Whenever it comes up, people are like, let's play pool. I'm like, okay, fine. You can watch me struggle at this. Like, I am aggressively bad at pool. Like, when I was in university, one of my best friends had a pool table in his basement, and a lot of times, obviously, we'd go over there as groups and drink and whatever, be in the basement playing pool, hanging out, doing dude stuff, hacking darts and drinking beers in the basement. And every single time I had to be paired with the guy who owned the pool table, who was actually good. And my role was like, hey, man, just like make a shot, you know, make a shot or two. That's it. It was the least role on the entire team. So, no, horrifically bad at pub games, shockingly bad at pub games, good at cottage games, horrible at pub games. Weird thing, I know. Competitive, million pubs in my life. I spent too much time chatting and drinking. Too little time
chatting
actually.
Chatting up the ladies, not practicing.
So that's exactly it. You know what? Thank you. That's a rebrand I needed. Is that like, no, he's just, you know, too busy with the girls at the bar than he is at with the darts. No, I'm horrible at darts. Unbelievably bad. But yeah, I don't know what I think my carnival game would be. I know what I've thought that it would be. But I don't think that it is. Is
we'll
Stewie there?
Go.
I don't know. No,
yeah, Stewie's here.
He's there or not? Oh, he's not. Oh, so like, yeah. You guys got to buzz in my ear. That's how that works. You go like.
Well,
the
you were ranting about girls at the bar and how you can't. Whatever. You can't get anything right.
Anthony Stewart joins us now. NHL and Sportsnet. Did you see Steph Curry at the carnival at shooting those threes and how he couldn't get any?
No, I did not. But I saw you guys eat about 20,000 chicken wings on Instagram Live.
I'm so
sure
covering.
That was more entertaining.
Yeah. I think I should have won. How many chicken wings do you think you could eat in one sitting? Have you ever pushed yourself?
At the Mandarin before I ate 20 chicken balls, or
yeah, yeah. I was just gonna say, like, I feel like, you know, we all thought we did so well, and you looked at it and you were like, "That's all you guys ate? Like, that was one bowl for Ailish, right?"
Yeah, and I'm protecting my mentions here, but let's just say it's probably north of 40 wings.
Whoa! I'm a little bit.
I was at Hooters one time. I think we were Hooters in Nashville. We ate about 50. Myself and Brian Boucher.
50 is a real stat. Like, cool. That's a, they should give you something.
That should be
that.
On your, like, hockey BB.
I was gonna say, like, that should be somewhere, man. Like, that should be a
is
somewhere.
Your Twitter bio.
Yeah, that should be up on the Hooters wall of, like, yeah, once ate 50 wings. Like, yeah, I want to go know where that Hooters is, because your picture better be on the wall somewhere. Like, don't let this guy back in for any wings night. He's banned. Okay,
I don't think you want that. I don't think you want that rumor floating around the NHL. Hey, this guy ate 50 wings last night.
Yeah, not only did he eat chicken wings last night, he ate 50. Like,
it's like, no wonder he was offside. Yeah.
Okay, so, hey, we came to this conclusion earlier. Obviously, it's too many men on the ice. But for me, it's like they were getting dominated. Kadri's 3-on-1. Anyway, just how did you feel about the too many men? Do you think that Cooper is justified? Like, do you think it impacted the end of the game? Like, how do you feel about the too many men call or not?
Well, you know, just being in the dressing room, the one thing I can tell you that the players are probably like, man, yeah, they missed the call, but I don't think they're as irate as Cooper was. And I think he was probably doing a little bit of theatrics because he probably wants to take more calls in game 5, right? So, you know, if you were so worried about the call, well, where was your video staff on, you know, on that call there? But, you know, what I was shocked by that, you know, the Colorado Avalanche team, you know, I don't know if there's an analytics staff for that, but they were crossing 3 planes of line so fast yesterday. You know, that second half of the game in the neutral zone, D to D, and they were crossing from blue line across the other blue line in the O zone, probably in about a second and a half. So, you know, for them to get burned on the last goal on that exact play, I think that's more so the coaching, where they were sort of being struggling by that the whole entire third period. So as much as they're irate, you can't blame the officials, because the pendulum usually swings back into your favor a lot sooner than later. So it's Cooper, you know, a lot of it was just probably getting some sound bites, because they probably want a couple extra power plays in game 5.
Well, this is the other thing too, man, and like I was talking about this, but I'm not sure how often that happens every game, right? Because it's not like I'm ever focused on the changes when I'm watching hockey games and I'm going like, oh, too many men. It's like when it's aggressively bad, that's when you notice it. And when it gets called, that's when you notice it, right? Like, those are the only times in a game that I think the average fan watches it. But, like, yeah, how many times do you think on an average game there's something within, like, the realm of what happened to close that game in terms of guy on the ice and guy gets off the ice?
Every single shift something happens.
That's what I'm saying.
And, you know, on the casual fan, the hardcore fan, well, we want more power plays, we want more penalties. You could technically call a penalty every single game, every shift, if you really, really wanted to. But I think from a player standpoint, a coach's standpoint, they want consistency. They want to know, okay, if you're going to call a hook in the first, it's got to be the same thing in the third. It can't be the timing of the game. You just want that consistency, because the players, they obviously can't adjust. They just need to know what it is that they need to adjust from. So, so I don't get the anger. I think it's a lot of it's built up online, and I'm seeing, you know, all the investigative journalists with six guys. Well, did you see the 7 guys that Tampa Bay had on the ice? And, you know, I actually saw one Twitter account, I think it was Steve Koulias. He actually said there was a high stick on the clear from a car before it hit Kemper, before he advanced the puck up the ice. So the game is so quick, and I urge anybody to watch a game ice level. It is the fastest game, and I can understand how you miss things. I know the officials are trained and paid a lot of money to catch everything, but it's impossible to catch every single thing. So I'm the farthest thing from an apologist for the referees, but it is fast.
Mm-hmm. It was funny, like, Twitter cesspool of people that are all of a sudden rules analysts. It's tough. But the thing that JD and I kind of agreed on as well was that the Lightning had no shot in that overtime. They gave their best effort in the first 3 periods. They were blocking shots. They were sacrificing the body. But by the time that fourth period came around, they had no business winning. Do you think that those injuries and the length of the seasons that they've played have finally caught up to them now?
I think so, but I think it's more so what, not what they're not doing, but what more so Colorado is doing. And if it's funny, I'm sort of a, I'm not tooting my own horn, but I'm ahead of the curve, and I've been saying this since I think of probably about December. I'm like, this Colorado team is fast. And just the way that they push the pace every single shift, all four lines, it's tough to keep up with. If you see Pat Maroon trying to guard Makar on the line there, Makar's doing the shimmy shake. He's doing left, right, center. And Maroon's just like, please, just score so I can get off the ice. But the pace that these guys play with, there's no team that can keep up with them consistently. So I think a lot of that's fitness. And, you know, you're seeing Makar in overtime looking as fresh as he did in the first period. So for me, it's amazing to watch just the pace, because usually a team, you know, they have some speedsters, you know, one or two lines, but they have four lines, 60, that just, that system that they're buying into, it's just speed, quickness, getting up the ice as quick as possible, that pace, it's amazing to watch and, you know, to analyze as well.
Yeah, I think that they're clearly the healthier team, which is a big advantage, but I don't think that it's something where if Tampa was fully healthy, we'd even be seeing that different of a result. You know what I mean? Like, it's just this Colorado team is an absolute wagon. They're so fast. You just hit on it. And they just, yeah, I think that they are going to be very, very deserving Stanley Cup champions. And, yeah, those guys are going to have a lot of tough decisions to make this offseason in terms of whether or not they're going to try to, quote, unquote, run this back and who's going to sacrifice what in order to make it happen. Because, yeah, like, if they are able to keep any semblance of this band together, they could win for a while. Like, they could end up actually stealing Tampa's Thunder, I think, a little bit in terms of a team that goes on a deep run and is able to establish, like, the – it's not a dynasty, obviously, but whatever the new modern version is of this salary cap dominance or back-to-back Stanley Cup appearances. So that brings me to this, I guess, like when it comes to those two teams, same thing, like special teams has been so huge in the series, right? Like it's just, it's one of the biggest stories for me. It's like one team, 1 of 14, the other 6 of 13. Like, is that more about Tampa's power play and lacking something, or is that more about the Avalanche penalty kill to you?
Well, I'm just trying to think of the analogy. If you punch a guy in the face and he blocks 22 of them, you know, on the 23rd, he's probably going to flinch, right? So, you know, so you can't really blame Tampa Bay because they've been blocking shots, jumping in front of them, blocking. Yeah, you know, I've never seen a team block as many shots in a power play, in a penalty kill in a Stanley Cup series. That hurts. It hurts. It takes the will out of you. It's tough. So I know that's their philosophy, but, you know, you're going into the Stanley Cup Finals here. It's your fourth series in a short period of time. It's tough. It's tough to keep up that pace. It's tough to keep up that intensity. And when you're playing against a young, fast, quick team like the Colorado Avalanche, you know, so like I said, you can't really fault the Tampa Bay Lightning. You know what I mean? They're back-to-back Stanley Cup champions, but they finally met their match where, you know, I think it would probably be the same result if they played the series last year, but Colorado got bumped out, obviously, by the Vegas Golden Knights. So, you know, for Tampa Bay, it's not a, hey, we got to blow it up. You know, it's just you got to continue to retool. But just with playoffs, it's, you know, specialty teams have to be special and injuries, and Colorado just has the advantage on both right now.
Who's leading the Conn Smythe for you right now?
Hurting a car, call Cale Makar. I'm amazed at, you know, I played with a, you know, 23-year-old Jay Bouwmeester, but, you know, he skated the same, but just how he takes over the game with his speed. You know, they were showing, him getting covered by Kucherov with a minute left, almost getting his pocket picked. And he's like, oh, I almost got my pocket picked. Okay, now it's time to go for a rush and almost score a goal. So just seeing a guy that young have a knowledge of the position and just how further ahead he is over the competition, that's what's amazing to me. Yeah, usually guys hit their peak at 27, 28, but for him at this young age to really take over series and score some big goals, just be a constant threat, you know, he's not just one of the best defensemen in the league. I think he's one of the best players in the league, and for me, he's got my vote so far for the Conn Smythe.
Yeah, he's playing a ton of minutes, and he's got good stats, right? Like, he's got the 5 points through the four games.
Who do you got? You got JT Compher or something off the board that's plus 7,000.
No, I think you're right.
You got like 50 bucks in the mascot.
No, I already I put my money. I only made one Conn Smythe bet ahead of this, and it was on Steven Stamkos because I'm a value guy with things like this. And so it's like I always bet I bet first goal scorer in games oftentimes, or first bucket scorer in basketball, and it's never based on who I think is going to win or score. It's always based on who I think is the best value to score. And so that's what I did with Stamkos.
If Nikushkin gets another goal, he could
be up
there.
I think that right now, to me, it's an interesting question just because there have been different Avalanche players that have taken over different games. Like, I thought, again, the broadcast did a really good job of highlighting how dominant Nathan MacKinnon was yesterday, but you can't give it to him over the course of the series, but man, he was incredible. I think Gabe Landeskog is very underrated, and he's probably having an underrated series even. Like, he's got 3 goals, he's got 4 points.
Landeskog's plus 2,500 to win. McKinnon's plus 500 and Cale Makar's minus 800.
That's what I mean, though, is like Nikushkin's had his moments, but like Cale Makar, I think, is the right answer. I just, I didn't think that the Vegas betting line would be that aggressive. But yeah, Makar's probably the right choice, which is insane because, like, I talked going into this thing about who had the most to gain from a legacy standpoint, and I made the case for Makar. But yeah, winning this Conn Smythe and doing it this way on this kind of a dominant team against that type of champion, yeah, like, this is really where we are going to start to get into that Bobby Orr stuff. And it's not going to be like one text to Kelly Rudy anymore on Hockey Night. It's going to be like everybody's going to have this take. And he's going to, yeah, I think, join the Connor McDavid category of, like, who are you starting the franchise with? Like, that's how big this is. Okay, so last one for me. How did you feel about Nazem Kadri when he scored that goal? Like, what are your Nazem Kadri thoughts, just, I guess, over the last, like, going to bed, thinking about the player himself, and especially if you're, because you're a Toronto guy.
One of my favorite gifts is the Rand Paul, and it says, "Justice never sleeps." And I think that was the first thing that came into my mind. Yeah, and it was too late. I wasn't going to get enough traction tweeting that at, 11:45 at night. But just seeing all the stuff that he's gone through off the ice, with the online BS, for him to step up and have these big, big games, that's what the legends are made of. And I don't know if anyone's played with a broken finger. It is tough where, it's the Peter Griffin where, he hurts his knee and he's just like, and he's doing it for about, 4 minutes of the segment here. To be playing, with a broken thumb at that high level and scoring that goal, that just shows, what type of player Kadri is too. And, I know he had his issues in the playoffs with the Toronto Maple Leafs, but this is a guy that you win championships with too. So for him to come back and score that big goal, I think you add a couple million to wherever he signs at the end of the season here too, because he is a big game player. And just like anybody else, it takes time to mature. It takes time to walk that fine line. And, you're looking at players like Corey Perry. So I think Kadri now, he's now got a job for life in the NHL because he's stepping up and playing some big, big moments, and it's good to see him now get some success, based on, some of the crap that he was dealing with earlier on in the playoffs.
Okay, last one before we let you go. Is the series over? Do you think that Tampa has any shot at coming back? They would be the team that could do it, but do you think it's happening?
Vince Carter, it's over. And, they say the playoff series, you really panic when you lose a game at home, and they finally beat the one stat that Tampa Bay was holding on to. They did not let a 5-on-5 goal at home since Game 7 against the Toronto Maple Leafs. Okay, that stat's gone to now. And, Vasilevskiy's playing okay. He's playing pretty good, but he's not. He's shown that he's human. So I'm trying to think what leg they really have to stand on right now, and I don't think it is. And there's no shame in their game. They've been deep into the playoffs the last couple of years here too, and I think it's just catching up to them. But I'll use the word dynasty, but I think this Colorado Avalanche now is a quote-unquote legacy in the making, and it's good to see, and it's great for the game of hockey.
Stewie, thanks for jumping on, buddy. We appreciate it. And, go crush 50 chicken wings today, bud.
All right, thanks a lot. Go Leafs, go.
See you, pal. Anthony Stewart, former NHL forward, and, of course, NHL on Sportsnet. So, yeah, I think, again, Makar... Maybe it was more obvious than I thought it was when it came to this award. I thought maybe it was going to be a little bit more wide open in terms of who made an impact on that final game. Because I did think that had the series ended after the first two, that it would have been Nikushkin. So they win one of the games, and now it's tilted pretty heavily to Cale Makar. Even Makar's goals were in the blowout. I have zero issue with Mikhail Makar. I thought it would be closer, though. I thought it would be able to be like, hey, this could come down to the wire. But I guess, again, you look at the stats and the totality and the role that he's playing on the ice and the way that he's changing the way Tampa Bay has to play, the way that he's running that power play. Like, you want to talk about like the differences between those two power plays? Yeah, we talked about with Christopher Stieg. Like, it's just he's impossible to defend when it comes to gaining the zone when you have both him and MacKinnon. And then him running that point and the way that he moves on the blue line, it's just it's deadly. He's impossible. So, yeah, this is just – we'll have more of a chance to talk about this tomorrow when we're setting up the game and when the series is over and we come back next week. But, yeah, this is insane legacy stuff that we're seeing from Kale Makar. And it's you can get pretty hyperbolic in terms of the takes that you can have.
Bobby Orr take.
For where he could go in terms of what he could be in this game. I'm with you. I think that this series is over. I think the Bolts are too beat up. And I don't think that this is going to, like, take anything away from their last two championships, but I felt for them a little bit because it's like, they did win a bubble championship. They did beat Montreal, who was just such a non-worthy adversary when they got there. And then they play this team, and they've had this incredible run, and they're such a good team. There's so much championship-caliber team, and everyone is just going to start swooning about Colorado. And, like, yeah, it's all going to be about Colorado right away. All right, it's time for something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
Today's chew is very simple, as we're about to speak to Michael Grange. There are different draft strategies. Just about everyone is always like, best player available, best player available. That's what you want. But the Raptors are sitting at number 33. And the more I think about where the Raptors are at as a franchise, the more I think it's actually not outside the realm of possibility that they're better next year than we think that they could even be. That if you look at the way Boston did it, what this team needs is depth. Like, they really need a little bit more depth. They need more shooting. There's a few elements that this team needs, right? They have very clear team needs. But they're also in a position where they have a general manager who loves upside. And best player available is a fluid term. And
especially
I've always thought,
in
like,
a draft where it's kind of a mix of past 15, everyone says it's kind of just like, whoa, everyone's the same, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's a very crapshooty draft. It played into why the Raptors felt comfortable trading down for Thad Young. By the way, this is going to become more of a thing, too. I'm going to talk about the Thad Young trade with Blake again. But, yeah, I've always thought that there should be a highest upside player available, like the HUA, the BPA, or FIT. Like, those are your draft strategies, right? And I think if you're the Toronto Raptors, would you still go with a stacking principle of adding like another wing player, or would you prefer that they draft a little bit for fit and that they try to add someone who could be like a senior coming out of college that provides a little bit of shooting, or someone that's a little bit more NBA ready that by the end of the season could actually be contributing to this team off of the bench? I actually think that this is a year where you think about it.
Option two for me. I think you've got enough.
Fit?
Yeah, 6'9". Wings, long and athletic. Why don't we have someone that's like got some shooting, you know, and some depth for me is what you said. I don't think it's out of the realm that, yeah, a 33 pick can be someone that plays and adds to your roster this year and gives you a little bit of a backup option. And they're not going to be a stud. I mean, there have been times where you get somebody in the 30s that's a stud. I think that's very hard to do, to find a diamond in the rough. I think Bobby Webster said yesterday they're looking for a versatile, defensive-minded player with shot-making ability considered a bonus.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's a pretty vague.
Right, I think that he's trying to cover all the bases, so if they do pick someone that's a little bit different, the fit or hey, he has this one thing that I mentioned is right. I think the fit's really important.
I'm always a best player available guy. I'm usually always highest upside available, especially when you are an organization like the Toronto Raptors. But yeah, I think that this is the first time, like, again, it's pick 33. So if you miss on this one, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world.
Try something different, maybe.
Or if you do, exactly. If you do something a little bit different. So yeah, I just think that this is a draft where you could definitely see the Raptors take an older player, like someone who's in, like, you know, a 22-year-old player, a 21-year-old player. I think that that's very, very, very much within the realm of possibility. responsibility for this team. We'll ask Michael Grange what he thinks about it next on the Fan Morning Show. JD and Ailish, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm JD Bunkus. Ailish Forfar. One of my favorite nights of the year. I love NBA draft night. My recommendation is you got to watch one way or the other, though. Either you're watching the TV broadcast or you're hanging out on Twitter. You can't do both. Because Twitter ruins it. Twitter's always like four picks ahead.
Yeah.
The problem is like that's where all the trades are, too. So you get the temptation of going like, what are the rumors? What are the trades? What are the people working on? And the broadcast is a little delayed on that. But it's my recommendation is that you pick. Unfortunately for our next guest, the decision's made for him. He's on Twitter. He's going to be on social media. He might break one of the stories. Michael Grange, senior columnist for Sportsnet. Good morning, man.
Good morning, guys. How is everybody?
We're doing well. Chris Haynes writes an article. The guy's one of the most connected dudes in the NBA. He says the Portland Trailblazers are in pursuit of forward OG Anunoby with the number 7 pick in Thursday's draft. Is that akin to the report of J.D. Bunkus looking for more money from Sportsnet?
One of those two things is more likely to happen.
Yeah. Me.
Sorry, JD.
No, really? Okay, you think it's the OG thing? Like, I was going to say, I think it's actually me. Like, I think I might get more cash.
No. I've talked to people.
Industry sources are telling you that they're like, he's already overpaid. They think he's paid him too much. They're going to ask him to take a veteran's minimum next year.
More money for Ailish, I think.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
definitely that. Definitely that.
Okay, the
warning's made.
I would say this. I mean, you know, I would say, you know, it's interesting. I asked Bobby Webster this the other day fairly directly. And you know, when I wrote about it, I made the point, like, this guy, he never said never, right, as it regards to, you know, the rumors around OG Anunoby and him being unhappy in his role and you know, that kind of thing. Like, he didn't go out and say, everything's perfect. We're not trading him. I have dreams too, you know, the Masai Ujiri thing when Nick Nurse was supposed to be going to the Lakers. So I think that the door is open. I think there's a reality where, I think those rumors being out there regarding OG have done the Raptors a huge favor. I think it's clearly, you know, it's allowed or given it a reason for pretty much every team in the league to call and go, what would it take? Because, you know, as we've discussed before on the show, like OG Anunoby at his best is, you know, he's a plug-and-play elite starter on an elite team, including on the Raptors, obviously. But, which isn't to say anything's going to happen, but if something does happen, you know, he's the means for the Raptors to make something happen. And, you know, as it relates specifically to Portland, I can't say why, you know, there's so much noise there other than they're kind of in a rush to do a bit of a rebuild. I think, you know, there is a bit of a relationship between Bobby Webster and Joe Cronin, right? If you're going back to the Norm Powell deal that brought, at the trade deadline a couple of years ago. So it's not crazy. And I guess then you just have to ask yourself, or the Raptors have to ask themselves, like, is this a way to make their whole team better? And, you know, it's not crazy. Let's just say it is a guy like Josh Hart. You know, I think he's a really good player. I think he fits really well with how the Raptors want to play. He's probably the best rebounding guard in the league, maybe outside DeJounte Murray. And, you know, a really good playmaker. So right off the bat, you get secondary playmaking. You get a guy who defends, who does, you know, he's a Villanova guy, does all those things you want to do, clears up your cap sheet a little bit. He's a little bit cheaper. And maybe you get a Nasir Little. And then it all, of course, depends on, is there someone available at number 7 that you really think could help your program? And, you know, those are the pros. You know, the cons are – OG Anunoby is right now excellent in his role if he chooses to be happy and excel in that role. And there's still upside with OG Anunoby. I don't think anyone's sitting here going, well, this is the best he's ever going to be. We've seen his best. He's topped out. I think we all agree there's more there. So that's the risk you're taking, is that you're missing out on a guy who could end up being borderline all-star, all-NBA, you know, perennial all-NBA, all-NBA defensive player. He just hasn't reached that ceiling yet.
Okay, so you said a lot of good things there. I'll start with this. First of all, yes, I agree. There's absolutely a scenario where you could trade OG Anunoby and the Raptors team could get better. And I think that far too often, especially with just like the way that a lot of this team is covered through social, it's kind of like this thing of like none of the Raptors players could ever get traded because they're already built. It's like, no, the team got bounced in the first round this year to a team in Philadelphia that maybe they could have beaten, but yeah, it wasn't overly impressive in the end. Like, yeah, there's a lot of improvements that this team could make. I just guess when I first see it and I see the 7th overall pick in this draft, I go, well, the Raptors traded down in this draft pretty comfortably for Thad Young because they didn't seem to really love it. And again, these are very different positions, number 7 being set versus potentially, you know, something that was going to be between 20 and 23, whatever the range they thought they were going to finish the season in. But that is pretty unanimously viewed as one where, like, yeah, there's not a ton of guys that have the ceiling of all-star in their future from, like, picks 4 or beyond 4. The last part of it for me is, like, we just saw an NBA Finals where Andrew Wiggins, like, was the second best player on a championship winning team. And the point I made earlier in the show, Grange, is like, what percentage do you think OG could give you of what Wiggins gave that Warriors team, right? Like, he's a highly intelligent basketball player who plays incredibly well off the ball. He can knock down a 3-point shot. He can rebound his ass off. He could defend Jason Tatum through a 7-game series, like, as the number one guy who does that job. He doesn't give you the, like, shot creation with the ball handling and the ability to attack the rim that Wiggins does. But that wasn't, like, what made Wiggins... that wasn't like his primary function or what made him primarily special in that series. So,
I mean, right now, OG Anunoby is better than Andrew Wiggins.
That's what I mean. Like, that's
like,
what I mean.
Like, I mean, you know, like, I think if OG Anunoby was playing the Wiggins role in Golden State, he would have been fine.
Exactly. So, this is my point. It's like, we just saw this guy do it, and I'm like, if you're the Raptors, you're going to sacrifice a guy that could literally, and I know that the pecking order is like, this is always a weird thing to do because it's like, he's the second best player on a championship winning team. Well, it's like, yeah, if your team has one of the best 10 players in the NBA history, right? Like, that's how that operates. Like, there's a way of, there's a narratively, or a way of putting this into a narrative box that fits it, but I just think, like, a player like OG in this version of the NBA is so incredibly valuable that you cannot move him for a draft pick that is a could be, and a player like Josh Hart, who I like too a lot, but is just like a very, very clear downgrade in terms of talent. And it's like, where does that really put you? I think that still kind of puts you where the Raptors are right now, which is sort of the thing I wanted to get to you with next, is this team in terms of where they are on the track. It's like they're in this awesome position where they have these really good players that fit the mold of where the NBA is going. They have Scottie Barnes, who's like the apple of their eye. They have Siakam, who, you know, I argued even earlier I'd rather have than Damian Lillard on my team if I'm OG Anunoby going to a different spot. They have this incredible coach. They have this great infrastructure. But, like, they don't have depth, and they don't quite have that star player that's that little bit of a level above Siakam. And I don't really know how they navigate that or how they really improve that without, like, yeah, continuing to draft, continuing to, like, really hit on free agency signings that are deep and they don't have a real rich history of doing, and the development of Barnes. Like, I don't know how else they amass kind of like the things that they need. They're sort of stuck in like the rich man's middle, I would say.
Yeah, well, one way to do it is you do a 3-for-1 trade. And that's kind of another, you know, a point I didn't make off the top is all the things you're saying are exactly right. And, you know, if you look, you know, this is a team that's still fairly early in their curve, right? Like, I don't think that, I don't think anyone in the organization believes that they're, you know, one player away from a championship, unless, of course, the player's, you know, a player they're not going to get. And so if you look back at sort of those, you know, the roster they had, let's say, when they did make those moves, look how deep those rosters were in 2000. That roster was in 2019. Norm Powell was the 11th man.
Yep.
And right now, this team does not have enough good players.
Nope.
You know, the high, you know, and you make a good point. Like, I'm not sure their top end is maybe good enough to be championship worthy, but their bottom end certainly isn't. And, you know, so that's sort of an interesting element here is you move a guy, let's say it's OG Anunoby, and you get, you know, you get Josh Hart, who I think, you know, straight up this year, I don't know if it's a downgrade at all, really. I mean, because it wouldn't be a downgrade if OG played 75 games, but we don't know that. You know, but I think he gives you a plug-and-play guy, a guy who's going to help you continue to be at the level you're at. Nasir Little, let's just say, is, and this works salary-wise, is he's 21. He's a super talented, athletic guy who's kind of has made some nice steps in the last couple of years. Maybe you're high on him. He becomes a guy who can play in rotation. And then it comes down to, is there someone in that draft you think projects to be a star quality player? And, you know, Benedict Mathurin, as an example, is a guy I think the Raptors would be ecstatic to draft if he was available, if they had a chance, if magic happened, right? You know, he played, they had him, Nick Nurse had him in camp last summer with the national team going against head up with Wiggins, with Shea Alexander, with Nikhil Walker Alexander. You know, so he, you know, there's probably no team in the league that has a better feel for what Benedict Mathurin could be because they've had him in their building competing against quality NBA players. You know, regardless, you know, and that's in addition to all the, you know, the fact he's played 2 years and the rest of it. So that's one example. Shaedon Sharpe, you know, kind of the mystery man, but a guy everyone you talk to in the league acknowledges he has the DNA of a superstar. You know, like, that doesn't mean he's going to be a star. It doesn't mean he's going to stick in the league. But if you're looking for a 6'6", 200-pound guy who's got not just elite athleticism but supreme athleticism, who can shoot and is a fluid ball handler, I don't know. Do you take a swing on that? Right. And then, you know, so all of a sudden you're looking at, you know, if you do a move like this, I'm not saying they will, I'm not saying they should. Your roster is deeper. Your salary cap sheet is a little better. And if you get lucky and you hit on, you know, a player that's available in this, in that range, maybe you have a future all-star.
Got to tell you, you just made a really compelling case, and now I'm just like, I'm torn. Just like, that's really good. Yeah, I'm a bit of a... No, no, hey, like, listen, it's a good case.
No, you should be torn. Like, I mean, yeah. I think it's, you know, it's... I just don't think it's something, you know, I think there's a... Like I said, the fact that these conversations are out there, these rumors are out there, is the best thing that's happened for Toronto, right?
Yeah.
Like, they're gonna go into this draft at that moment and know exactly what... you know, OG Anunoby could get them if they wanted to move on, right? And I would say this too, like this notion that he's unhappy in his role, like, less overstated. Like, I think he's looking at the landscape and going, well, there are obviously, you know, Siakam, you know, everything's invested in Scottie Barnes to become Siakam 1A, if not better. Yep. So is there enough room for me to kind of grow my game to the point where when my contract's up, I can get, you know, something close to a max, right? And you know, is that situation here in Toronto? Maybe not, right? So I think there's a business decision going on. So I don't think he's, like, stomping his feet. He was in the building working out with them the other day. And these kind of conversations and discussions happen on every single NBA roster, right?
100%.
Every guy who's starting wants more ball. Every guy who's not starting wants to start. It's a constant, constant, constant crush of, I want more, because... Yeah. That's who you get paid. So I don't think anyone should read into any of this as, like, OG Anunoby, if he stays, is a problem. The Raptors, you know, they've had Kyle Lowry here his entire career. They know what a problem is, right? They've dealt with Pascal Siakam, you know, through one of the most difficult impasses a star player and a team can have. So, you know, I don't think they're scared, feel like they're under pressure to do anything. I just think that there's, you know, like you said, this is a pretty good team that's not quite there. How do they make steps to get there? You know, this is an avenue you have to explore.
No, it absolutely. And you can both love OG Anunoby or love some of the players and think that that is the move to make. I I think that there's a couple things there. One is you're right. When there's this much smoke around something, I think that, yeah, it's not just completely league-driven. And I think that it's tough for me to believe that OG Anunoby went into last year's season with everyone, including like Zach Lowe, saying this could be the most improved player of the year, and this is someone who's going to take on the lion's share of more offensive reps with this team and could succeed Siakam if they make a trade to, hey, we want you to be the corner three-point shooter and defend. Like, yeah, I think that that's a pretty hard shift in terms of expectation for a player. When you start to think about those roles, I think that he probably has that belief in him. I think a lot of this, though, would come down to, if you're doing the Portland trade, is, yes, the way that the Raptors evaluate the seventh pick, and I'm not going to pretend to be an expert. In this year's draft, I probably know less about some of the guys than I even have in years past, but Shaedon Sharpe versus Mathurin, like these two Canadian guys, like obviously we're not making this case because they're Canadian. Those days are long gone. This is a legitimately, both of these guys have been mock draft at seven. Both of these guys could be in this range. Again, it's a little bit topsy-turvy. The thing I find fascinating about these guys is that they're like very different in terms of the way that they've been received in their interviews. Like Shaedon Sharpe is by all accounts like, hey, every interview this guy seems to be doing with teams is like, oof, there's not a lot of sample. Like, yeah, he could be a superstar, but like he hasn't played any meaningful basketball. Whereas Mathurin is like blowing people away in these interviews. He's blowing away teams in these meetings. And people wonder about the upside, though, because of the playmaking ability and just like the overall what he could be in this league, and where he kind of fits amongst like the best teams in the NBA. Like, do you have a lean on either guy? Do you have any feeling about like why there's such a huge discrepancy between the two of them when it comes to like the way teams have seemingly felt about at least their stuff off the floor?
I think Mathurin has kind of gone a very sound traditional route. I believe he's represented by BDA, Bill Duffy, who, you know, has, you know, one of the longest track records in the league. Like, I mean, he's, you know, he knows how to do this, right? Like, he routinely has guys in the top, you know, top half of the lottery. And, you know, and I think he's the same guy, for example, who, you know, going back, his first primary client was Steve Nash. And, you know, he, as an agency, they gravitate to a certain type of client as well. And so as a result, I think there's something to that. And I think on the Shaedon Sharpe deal, he's kind of gone a different route, right? He doesn't have an official agent. He's, you know, he's there kind of relying on, the family's kind of relying on a family advisor who he's kind of, has kind of worked, they've worked together since from AAU basketball days. They're all going through this for the first time. So, you know, I think there's maybe a little bit of uncertainty that's kind of crept into that. I would say, you know, just doing a little reporting around Shaedon, I have a story up on Sportsnet, and you know, great family, really good kid, people like him. Guess what? I talked to a couple of different guys who coached him as a kid, and maybe he didn't always play hard enough, right? Like,
yeah.
These guys, right? Well, guess what? You're the most talented 15, 16-year-old in the world. Maybe you don't play hard all the time. So, you know, there's a little bit of that. And again, he's it's definitely a bit of a swing, right? If you're an NBA organization who's going to pick really high and pass on some much more certain players, you have to accept the possibility that he could be someone who doesn't hit. Flip side, again, going back to his, you know, his gifts, you know, you could look like a genius. I think Ben Mathurin is a guy, safely, you look at him, that guy's going to be in the league 10, 12, 13 years, right? Like, yeah. I mean, where he's going to get to, we don't know, but he's not, you know, it's a very low risk play. He's a good shooter. He moves well. He's tough. And like I said, in the Raptors case, they know him as well as anyone in basketball. So, you know, I think that's kind of an interesting. The flip side of that too is which front office is more equipped to take a swing on a guy and handle it if it doesn't work out. Well, I'd say Masai Ujiri can take the heat, right? So it's kind of an interesting one there.
Yeah, man. God, I'm so excited. And now I'm even more excited because I think the Raptors are even in a better position than I thought they were even going to be in. Michael Grange, again, go read the piece up on sportsnet.ca right now. Senior columnist for Sportsnet. Keep doing great work, man. Thanks so much, and we'll be following you tonight.
All right.
right. Have a good time. Have a good day. Bye.
See you, Grinch. Michael Grinch. Let's take a break. Let's come back. And let's kind of just keep this thought rolling. Let's ask Blake Murphy what he thinks about some of the stuff that we just kicked around with Grange. Case. There's a case. But what would you do if you got that pick at 7? What would Blake Murphy do after he's talked to, you know, Sam Vecenie today? He's also got Nick Nurse on later today. But yes, Blake Murphy, we'll do the full hour. Wake and rake and, yeah, some Blue Jays, but mostly, yeah, Raptors draft plans today and how they should feel about the smoke that's around OG Anunoby. That's next on the Fan Morning Show. J.D. Bunkus, Ailish Forfar, Sports at 590 The Fan.